and welcome to In Harmony. I'm your host, Laura Ferrero, a longtime journalist and founder of M4G Media. On In Harmony, we talk to musicians, artists, authors, activists, and other fascinating guests about their wellness practices, artistry, social activism, and more. Today, we're joined by Alicia Bagnano, the mastermind behind the incredible indie rock band Bully. On the verge of releasing Bully's third album, Sugar Egg, on Sub Pop Records, Alicia admits she overcame a lot of insecurities and self-doubt, which freed her from self-criticism and allowed her to produce some of her best work yet. It also liberated her from the need to prove herself in a typically male-dominated industry, which she felt compelled to do on Bully's first two albums by handling most of the engineering duties herself. This time, she let go of the reins a little bit to focus more on the music and songwriting, which resulted in poignant, compelling, and honest songs. Alicia also shared about her experience coming to terms with the fact that she has bipolar disorder in one of her very first public conversations about it. She shared how she discovered it and the tools she uses to manage it and live with it every day. We also talked about the nonprofits and good causes she supports, what she does to stay healthy and grounded, including meditation and mindfulness practices, and a lot more. So sit back, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with Alicia. First, here's a little bit of Bully's new song, Where to Start, to take us into the interview. So I'm here with Alicia from Bully. Alicia, I'm so glad to join you. Thank you so much for connecting today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. So I know that it's kind of a strange time and you're quarantining in Nashville. How's everything going with that?
It's good. It's going well. I mean, I've just been, I work from home anyway since Bully is my full-time job, so I'm kind of used to working from home, but yeah, it's been going well. I've just been walking my dogs and working on record stuff.
Have you found yourself with some extra creative space now that you're not quite as busy and not able to be on the road right now?
Truthfully, no. I've been spending so much time trying to wrap up all the odds and ends for the Sugar Egg release, and like getting the bio together and press photos and picking color vinyls and all that stuff, that I haven't really dove back into writing. I'm just kind of in the thick of it, and the live streams and stuff. Usually my spare time is spent kind of working on that and figuring out how to rework the set to be able to play it solo.
Yes, this quarantining is presenting everyone with a whole new set of challenges. Of course, you're on the brink of releasing your third album, Sugar Egg, on Sub Pop, as you mentioned. How does it feel to be on the verge of putting it out into the world after working on it for about 3 years?
Yeah, it feels great. I can't, your voice is so soothing.
Oh.
It feels great. Yeah, I've been working on it forever and I'm really proud of it. So it's kind of one of those things when I finish a record, well, not really for the last one, but for this one, I was like, you know what, you did all that you could do. So even if it bombs, who cares? As long as you're proud, then that's all that matters.
Yeah, well, I've heard a sneak preview and it's awesome. So
thanks.
But you know, I was was reading that you overcame some insecurities when recording this album. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you were able to let them go?
Yeah, I think I was just in a lot better of a headspace, but a lot of it had to do with a million things, but one of the things being just having it be my third time around, I just realized I was ready for change. And two of the guys that I had played on the last two records with aren't playing anymore. One of them went to school and the other I had to part ways with. And so it was kind of like restarting, or a little bit of a bully rebirth. It just kind of felt like I did when I had initially started the band and was working on that EP. And it was just really good to be back in that space and have that confidence back. And I think my creativity really benefited from that, because I was just able to sit alone at my house and do a million things and not kind of have to worry about anybody else rolling their eyes at them. Not like that happened before, but you know what I'm saying? It's pretty awkward to try new things and be creative around other people. So it was just really nice being able to do that and kind of turn over the engineering duties to John Congleton and Graham Walsh and not have to worry about that. And I just felt like I could really focus on the music for the first time in a way that I hadn't been able to do before. So it was great. Right. I mean, I think all of it shows in the writing and the record, but I definitely felt it if it doesn't.
Yeah, I know you engineered your previous albums.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is, I guess, did it feel like maybe not having the close collaborators and also having the collaborator to do engineering, did it free you up to focus more on the lyrics and the music?
Yeah, so much so. I mean, I focus on the lyrics equally each record. That's definitely the most time-consuming part of it for me, but yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think like taking myself out of that box that I had put myself in before, where I want everything on the record to be able to be 100% replicated live, and just kind of letting go of that idea and experimenting with different things or feedbacks or sounds or pedals or vocal effects. It was just really cool to be able to do that and to step away from a place where I had put myself before.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it seems to me that a lot of the lyrics seem to be about loss, either of a loved one or of your faith. Is that accurate? And if so, could you talk a little bit about that?
As far as like religion goes, I'm not a religious person. I think songs like Fire may come off that way, but that's really just about being bipolar. Like three of those songs are about that. And that was the words that I found to kind of express the feelings that I had inside. And I wrote that knowing those would be interpreted differently than I had intended, but I also let that go. That was, again, part of this writing process where I was just like, whatever, like, who cares, you know, do what you want to do and try and not sit and think about what everyone else is going to think about it and how they're going to receive it.
In terms of being bipolar, if you feel comfortable, could you talk about how, you know, you discovered that you were and how you've been able to deal with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an ongoing process. I feel so bad for anyone that I'm dating. It's like just a lot. I mean, I'm glad to be in the place where I am now. This is like the first time that I've, or for the past few months, that I've really been comfortable just talking about it and bringing it up and sort of disconnecting myself from the stigma that people can sometimes tack on to it. But yeah, I just, how I found out, I was just losing my mind pretty much. I was just super, super paranoid. Like my paranoia was off the charts and I had kind of completely lost any sense of whether or not I was being rational or irrational, and that just like totally made my brain spiral and kind of my self-confidence plummet, because I just couldn't really trust myself. And I think that just put me in a really bad place and made me constantly kind of wonder if I was right or if I was wrong. And I think I would look for other people for that validation since I couldn't give it to myself. And all of that just sort of manifested into this like nasty cloud of self-doubt. And so, yeah, I mean, it just started with therapy. They diagnosed me, got a psychiatrist, and then it was like a year or so of a trial and error for medications. And then eventually we found one that stuck and it changed my life completely. I'm not even exaggerating. It was just really wonderful. It was just like, I just felt good and I felt like I could trust myself, and I felt just having, you know, that extreme paranoia and anxiety and heightened senses of mind, and then just having them completely drop is just so exhausting. It just consumes so much of you. And it's still there. It's not like it's completely gone, but I at least have signs and clues and hints of when maybe I'm in a certain state, and I can recognize it, and maybe know that I need to just close myself off from the world for a day, or, you know, say to my significant other, I'm having a day, or like, this is a week, and they'll be like, okay, yeah, I understand. But yeah, I feel like I have a lot better tools to cope with it now than I did before. And I think so much of the third record is a product of that, because I don't think that I would have been able to hand over those engineering duties if I hadn't, just because I would feel some sort of responsibility to engineer the record to kind of prove myself, or to like prove to people that I could do it. And this was the first time I was just like, fuck it, I know that I can do it. Why am I doing this? Like, well, why am I sacrificing these songs, you know, just to like show the world that I can? It's stupid. And yeah, I mean, a lot of that too was because I felt some sort of responsibility being a woman in a male dominated field to pursue the engineering side of it. But it doesn't have to be on Bully Records. I'm still doing it. I still love working on other people's projects. And yeah, I mean, it changed everything.
Yeah, it sounds like there was also some, in addition to gaining tools, better tools in the medication, maybe some self-acceptance that happened too.
Yeah.
And even in terms of being able to let go and feel like you didn't need to prove anything by engineering this album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great. It's a great feeling.
That's awesome. And you mentioned that you discovered some better tools to deal with it. Was there anything besides the therapy and the medication that you've learned and that you've been doing?
Trying to stay on some sort of meditation schedule, definitely, but I'm not great about it. But I have a little note on my bathroom mirror that reminds me to do it, even if it's just 10 minutes a day. Running sometimes, definitely. I used to box and do yoga, but since quarantine happened, I haven't been going to any gyms. I don't do boxing, like fighting boxing. It's just like classes on a punching bag. Let me clarify. I'm not, like, getting, right. I'm not getting in the ring anywhere. Yeah, those were really good outlets for me, and also leveled out my head. And so when quarantine started, I kind of felt like didn't really know what to do. And I think running, even though I can't stand it, definitely resets your brain in a positive way when you're done. So yeah, that, and then really just trying to tell myself like, okay, you're thinking this, maybe, well, I don't know how to explain what's going on in my brain right now, but yeah, there's just like little signs that I know. It's so frustrating because one of the frustrating parts is even though I've worked it out so much and done so much work to be able to identify when my mood is in flux, I still sometimes don't realize it until I'm almost out of it. And that just is so frustrating to me because it's very annoying. But sometimes I can catch it while I'm in it and then I just know what to do a little bit, or at least I can like recognize that it's happening, and that kind of helps level out my brain as well. But yeah, a combination of all those things. I would say playing live, but we can't, but that's really the best thing in the world.
Oh yeah, I can imagine that would be really like, I don't know, would you call it grounding in some ways, or what do you love about it?
I just feel like my most authentic self whenever we're playing. Like there's nothing else that comes close to that feeling for me. I don't know like exactly what it is about it, but as somebody who's constantly just like, who the fuck am I when I play live, it feels like, okay, this is like exactly where I should be. This feels so good, and it's just such a good outlet for negative energy. But also just, you know, being able to scream and have fun and like emotionally connect with people who are listening, or at least try, is just, yeah, the best thing. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, go for okay. it.
Sorry, I have a trash mouth. Usually they tell me before if I can't, but I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
No, it's all good. I think I just need to flag up a little warning on iTunes. There's profanity.
Probably a good idea. She's a mess.
No. I also have to say that, you know, I think it's wonderful that you're being open and sharing your experience with bipolar disorder, because I think that can help so many people just to be open about it. And as you said, like not have a stigma attached to it by not feeling ashamed of it and speaking about it.
Yeah, well, it's crazy. When I was kind of first working it all out, I had went to a bipolar support group, and I like sat down, and it didn't help me much because it was people just kind of talking about how insane they felt. Not actually insane, but you know what I'm saying, how just like chaotic they felt. And I was just like, holy shit, I'm definitely not alone in this. This is crazy. Like all these feelings that I had that I didn't really know how to express. Cause I mean, I didn't even talk to anybody about it for years. This is really my first time talking about it publicly, except for with my mom and a few of my siblings and, the person that I'm dating. So it just feels good to be like, I think my biggest hesitation before, which I was always scared that if I brought it up, especially in a professional environment, that I would like lose credibility as far as my decision making goes and like what I want to do. I was worried kind of that people might be like, oh, well, she probably just isn't feeling right. Just like, you know, don't listen to that and we'll do this or whatever, which is not true at all, especially not with the people that I work with, because I have like the best manager in the world and he has the most supportive team. But you know, I don't know. I think just like little voices get in your head, since it's just like classified as, I don't know. I don't really know what I'm saying anymore, but
no, it makes sense. Yeah. Putting yourself out there and I think in any way can be kind of scary, and you know, make yourself vulnerable and you don't know how people will react, but I think people who matter will respond well. And then there are people that you may touch that you wouldn't have ever imagined just by being honest about who you are.
Yeah.
So that's the hope anyway.
Yeah. I wish I had like more advice for those people, because really I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I still feel like there's just so much that I can't even figure out for myself. But it is nice to know sometimes when you're in a situation like that you really don't feel like there's anyone you can talk to about it except for like your therapist or psychiatrist, because you just don't know like if anybody else is feeling that way. So it's nice to know that you're not alone in that, for sure. Or it was nice for me to find out. It was actually mind-blowing for me to find out, because I just felt like it was such a personal thing that I had just kept inside. And then hearing people describe some of the exact same things was just like, holy shit, this is wild.
I guess, did that comfort you and make you feel less alone in some ways?
Totally. Like, well, or at least things that I thought about where I was just like, why does this make me feel this way? Or is this a part of this? You know, like, is this a part of being bipolar? Or is this just me? Or like, you know, how is this relating to what is going on? And then realizing that like, oh yeah, this is just something that's going on in your head. And like, you are not your thoughts. That is something that you're thinking. That doesn't mean that is who you are, or you're not made of that. And I feel like in some ways it like allowed me to kind of detach from some of those things, or just not blame myself as much.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And you mentioned earlier that you've been attending Dharma talks and using mindfulness practices. Can you talk a little bit about what the Dharma talks are? And does using mindfulness help you identify what those thoughts are and detach from them a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I meditate and I try and practice mindfulness, though I am like very not, you know, I'm not like, I don't know. I don't really know how to explain it. I'm like pretty inappropriate and have a foul mouth. So like, I don't think that I come off as the most mindful person, but I think practicing it and like reading about it and listening to podcasts on it really does sit with you and help you out, at least for that minute or however long you're listening to the lecture. But the Dharma talks are just amazing. There's actually a podcast that they do of them. It's Wild Heart Meditation Center, and it's in Nashville, and it's been on Zoom now since quarantine and the center is closed, but it is the most grounding that I will have felt all week. It's so nice. A lot of what they talk about is just I don't really even know how to sum it up, but just kind of like I said about like, you know, you are not your thoughts, you're separate from that, and kind of trying to note whether you're thinking or feeling when you're trying to relax, and also just sitting with your pain, because everybody's got something that like kind of causes that giant hole in your gut or like that sinking feeling, and whether it's, I don't know, whatever it may be, just sitting with it instead of running away from it. Which honestly, I was talking to one of the teachers about this the other day, because I'm like, I'm sitting with it, it's not helping. Like, I'm just, it's here. But I think just creating that sort of awareness is really helpful. And yeah, it's just like, it's very soothing. And for me too, I'm incredibly impulsive, and just having that weekly reminder of, hey, you're worked up right now. Just give this, you know, just mellow out before you react. Just wait. Having that little reminder really, really helps me. And I know I said this like twice already, but the thing, one time, this teacher, Andrew, said, you know, there's like so many things about you that you want to fix about yourself. And this probably isn't going to be nearly as effective when I say it versus when he said it and I heard it for the first time. But he said something about, you're like always kind of searching, like, how can I fix myself? How can I fix that I have trust issues? How can I fix my insecurities or whatever it may be? And he said, he was like, you have the tools inside of yourself to fix that. You're not looking for tools that you need. Like, you already have it inside of yourself. You just need to figure out how to access it. And that was just so cool to hear, because there's certain things that I've done my whole life that I've just accepted and decided that's just the person I am, instead of, you know, that's just a part of me that I could relearn. And kind of hearing that for the first time was really eye-opening for me, to just be like, oh, no, that's not who I am. I can learn to trust, you know, instead of just being like, this is how I am in relationships. I don't want to be in a relationship, blah, 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 or whatever. I'm just using an example, or maybe not. But yeah, I don't know.
No, it totally resonates with some of the stuff I've been doing too. I'm a part of an online meditation group as well. And the woman who leads it, her name's Julie Pyatt. And she says repeatedly, you know, you are the one you've been waiting for, which I think is similar to you have the tools you need to fix yourself. It's mm-hmm. just like nobody is going to come and save you, which I guess could also be seen as a little disconcerting. But
yeah.
But then again, once you know that you've got the power to fix those things, and of course it takes work, but it is kind of liberating too and hopeful.
It's so liberating. It's so hopeful. Yeah. I mean, everybody should hear it. It's just a good pick me up. It's so much more than that, but I don't think there's anyone who would sit through one of those meetings and not feel better, you know?
Yeah. I wish. Is it just in Nashville, or is it a Wild chain Ham. Do you know?
I don't think so, but I'm sure that there's places in most cities. But even if you can just put on the podcast in the Zoom meetings, anybody can get into. So it's donation based. It's really great. Wild Heart. It sounds like I'm like sponsored by them or something. But it's Wild Heart Meditation Center in Nashville. And yeah, I mean, I highly suggest that, or anything that's in your city, or just, yeah, any sort of resources like that may help.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Cool. And then just switching gears a little bit. So we originally met a couple of years ago at a show in Portland, where the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls in Portland was benefiting from the show. And you were so kind to like sign posters that we sold for them. And I know that you've been supporting some organizations that are important to you through your music downloads and live streams and more, including the nonprofits NAACP and Gideon's Army. Can you talk a little bit about them and why they're important to you?
I mean, I think we try and just switch up where donations are going pretty often, but it's just a nice thing to do if you take a portion out of that or do things for other companies that you know need it. I think we just do it because we should, and everybody should have a duty to, and take that opportunity when they can. Gideon's Army is Nashville based, and obviously everyone knows what the NAACP is, but yeah, it's just there's a serious movement going on right now, and I think anything you can do to kind of build awareness, or any donations you can make to help that cause, which has been an issue forever and will continue to be an issue, is helpful. And just to kind of, you know, keep it relevant and not have it just be a trend, and yeah, keep your awareness up. But yeah, that's why we do it. We're not like martyrs or anything. I think that everybody's kind of making donations right now and trying to help out and trying to help build those organizations that are creating resources for people's voices to be heard, and you know, to fight for equality, racial inequality, justice for racial inequality. And yeah, it's just kind of like everyone's job to chip in and work together to make changes.
Yeah, I know that Jeff Tweedy from Wilco recently advocated for the creation of a program that encourages songwriters and musicians to donate a portion of their royalties to racial justice organizations. He pledged to donate about 5% of his own royalties towards those causes. I know that so many people are working toward that right now, which is great, but it's crazy that it's even still necessary. That said, I believe that every little bit counts, and even raising awareness is so valuable, even if your fans can't donate a whole lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, anybody can donate $5. You know what I'm saying? Like, maybe not everybody, but most people. And
yeah, and what is, can you talk a little bit about what Gideon's army does?
They do a bunch of stuff, kind of trying to build awareness towards racial inequality in Nashville, but they also did a bunch of stuff to help rebuild North Nashville after the tornado hit. I mean, they're just looking out for kids and fighting for racial justice, and they are a really great organization that's local in the city, and they do just a bunch of stuff. They raise awareness about where the budget's being spent. They kind of keep you updated on everything that's going on in the community, and they're just great.
Alicia, I don't want to keep you too much longer, but have you thought beyond the release of your album, if there's, you know, what else is in store for you this year since live touring isn't possible right now?
Probably just more live streams. And then after the record gets out, I'll just start working on the next project. But everything's kind of up in the air right now due to COVID and touring being temporarily suspended.
Yeah. How have you made the shift to live streams? Like, what is that like for you?
It's good. I was really hesitant at first. I think that after seeing the positive feedback from Bully fans, it made me a lot more comfortable in trying to rework some of that stuff to play solo. I never thought I would be playing any Bully stuff solo. So, but it's been cool. It's been a really good learning experience, and it's also kind of all I can do right now. So you just have to make it work. But I've been enjoying it.
Oh, good. Good. And where can people find you and your music?
Bully the Music at Instagram. I think it's Bully the Music everywhere on Facebook and Twitter. And the website is Bully the Music. So Bully the Music anything.
Okay, cool. Well, again, thank you. It was so wonderful to catch up with you. And congratulations on the upcoming release of Sugar Egg.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Well, that wraps up my conversation with Alicia. I hope you enjoyed it. I feel really privileged that she shared and opened up with us about her experiences dealing with bipolar disorder and how she's been able not only to manage it, but to find the tools to thrive and be exceptionally creative. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you back here next time. In Harmony was produced and edited by me, Laura Ferrero. A special thank you to James Breeman for the original theme music, and to Sophie Walker for her help with show notes and social media. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends about us, and you can find us on most podcasting platforms, including Spotify and Apple, where it would be wonderful if you rated us by just scrolling down and clicking on the stars or leaving a comment. You can follow along with us on Instagram and Facebook at In Harmony Podcast and on Twitter at In Harmony Pod. Thanks again for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.